Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. I am. Anyway, okay, so, there's another video experiment. I don't think it's very useful, except to maybe illustrate just how, the people making the counter-argument really aren't on the subject. For 2 years I've been talking about levers. Talking about how they kind of just prove that the kinetic energy theory doesn't work. Point out that springs also illustrate the point. And that there's no continuity in the physics. I mean, you just can't make any sense out of the argument being made that somehow momentum and kinetic energy, 1/2 mv², are somehow compatible theories. You have to believe in one or the other. And frankly, unless you believe in free energy, you only have one choice, momentum. It's the only one that works everywhere. Kinetic energy fails every time you do it, every time you use something's energy to move objects that have less mass. All right, or more mass. Every time you do a conversion from one mass to another mass, in terms of the possessor of the velocity, the energy. Alright, so I guess we will draw first. Just to illustrate the arguments. Okay, so it's sort of a known fact, okay, that springs are linear, would be the word for it, okay, that they compress, okay, evenly. So the amount of force you apply, weight. They measure weight, okay? They measure momentum. Momentum is weight. All right. That's what, you have a mass, but your mass doesn't weigh anything unless I put it in a force or I give it a velocity. I have to give it a velocity, frankly. Putting it in the force, putting it in gravity is essentially the same thing as giving it a velocity. I have a velocity now. Yeah. Just a fact. I'm pushing into the Earth is pushing me back up. And it's real. And that gives my mass weight. I could do the same thing moving sideways. I could put a bathroom scale, against the surface, but over here, and I could move into it with a velocity, with my mass. And the fact is I could go a certain velocity, 1 millimeter a second or something. I guess it has to be 1/10 of gravity, so it would be 1 meter per second. And I will weigh my weight. Okay, so I will acquire a weight, okay, by moving the mass. And so that essentially is mass and velocity, which equals weight, which equals energy, which equals blah, blah, blah. It's all the same thing. So the idea is that a spring, you go 100 miles an hour, you'll do this to the spring, you go 50 miles an hour, you do this to the spring, blah, blah. It's proportional. The weight, the velocity times the mass will produce a certain compression, and it works out to be per inch exactly the same. All right, now friction, on the other hand, created by gravity, not so much. Doesn't do that, doesn't have the same specific proportionality. So if I'm traveling across a surface, as been shown in these different videos, this would be 1 unit of distance, and this would be 4 units of distance, okay? But the trick is, this is only 2 units of time. So this has twice the velocity. 2x velocity, 1x velocity. All right, so one velocity only gets you this, 1 unit of distance. Twice the velocity gets you 4 units of distance, because obviously you're moving faster. Now, if you could weigh, okay, with the object weighed as it's traveling, okay, this weight would be half of this weight. the total weight is still only twice as much, the velocity portion, the time portion. It's only the time you're on the scale that you can count as pressure. So if you weighed the two, you know, this would weigh one weight, and this would have only two weights for this whole gigantic portion. It's only too much. It only weighs twice as much. It doesn't weigh four times as much. So, I mean, this whole piece here, like I said, this 3 units of distance, all right, you're doing the same time you do this 1 unit. So you can sort of understand, I sort of drew it backwards. That's an acceleration, not a deceleration. Obviously, it's the other way around. These 3 units of distance, okay, and then this one here. This is the same as this. So the object only goes half the speed when it reaches, you know, 3/4 of the distance. So 3/4 of the distance, then it goes half as fast. Then it goes as fast as this one started. All right, well, I've been over this better than I just went over it, but it doesn't really matter. The real argument is their understanding of how gravity works. This is all based on the fact that gravity has this little trick to it that, you know, you drop something and you'll have a velocity, and to double the velocity you have to drop it from twice as high, four times as high, to get twice the velocity. That's why this whole conversation exists, is because of that works in gravity. The fact is, the faster you can leave, the faster your velocity when you leave, the more territory, okay, you can consume in the gravity, because you'll be in it less time. And it's just about the time. You can understand, if I leave at twice the speed, I'll have this huge advantage of covering three times the distance. Yeah, well, it's total four. In the same amount of time. So if you thought of gravity as rain, you're going to get less wet per foot. So your mileage, it's just better mileage. The faster you can leave the Earth, the less energy you'll need per foot. It's just a fact. You'll use less energy per foot traveled, because you're taking advantage of the fact that you won't be in the total amount of gravity as long. And that's all that matters. It's how long are you in the gravity. So I've tried to illustrate with that with a simple argument that there's a certain amount of gravity being created by a mass, and what decides how much you're going to get bent by that gravitational field is just dependent on how much time you spend in it. So if you thought of it as a paint sprayer, the idea is that the faster you go through it, the less paint you're going to get on you. And the argument is really that simple. It's just about time. And the slower you go, the more paint, the more likely it is you crash into the object. So the faster you can go through the field of gravity, the paint, the less paint. Now, it's that simple. That's how the real universe works. Now, they're arguing for some different kind of universe that somehow, I can't explain what they think, because it doesn't work. It doesn't happen that way. There's not the same amount of bending, okay, no matter what speed you're going. There's not the same amount of force being applied to your paint. I mean, it's just a fact. All right, so this all comes down to this simple argument they make, that they say something that's, you know, 10 tons or 10-ounce train, okay, going 5 miles an hour, they argue has half the energy of a 5-ounce train going 10. That's their argument, that because of this V-squared function, okay, it's a truth that this train has twice as much energy. And they don't... Oh, well, that's unfortunate. Yeah. There. Yeah. And so all I have to do is prove that something breaks that rule, and the simple thing I can prove is that a lever breaks the rule. Okay, it can make a 5-ton train out of a 10-ton train. I just crash the 10-ton train here, I put the 5-ton train out here, twice the distance, and this energy in will equal this energy out, and I will in fact do the simple weight conversion. They have the same weight. They hit the wall with the same weight. They compress the spring the same amount. Those are the simple arguments. And somehow we haven't found perfect enough experimental evidence. Now, the Mythbusters video where they crushed clay and they crushed cars and they found it perfectly fit momentum and there was no sign of kinetic energy. Then you have the 1700s and the Brozo experiments where they drop objects into clay and see how much was displaced, how much clay was displaced. Now the problem is the objects are dropping around, and as I've pointed out, you can sort of understand the geometry of round objects is they're very flat here and, and they're flat sideways this way. They're pushing this way here and they're pushing down here. And obviously, if you're pushing down, you're going to have to eventually push sideways. So there's two motions required. The less depth you get in the clay, the more time you spent pushing clay down, and the further you go through the clay, the more time you spend more time pushing clay sideways, just the one motion. You move it out of the way in just one motion versus two motions. And that's why there's that differential. All right, change the shape of the object and you'll change how much it penetrates based on velocity. Twice the velocity will only get you twice the penetration if you shape the object appropriately. All right. All right, so now we're arguing, okay, about a simple experiment. I guess I'll erase. Draw the simple experiment. That doesn't have any theory behind it anyway. This isn't what I've been talking about for 2 years. So it's certainly, in a way, not directed at my arguments in any way. All right, as I have previously stated, I think Franklin, who has sort of made a mess out of my subject, in terms of making arguments that aren't my arguments in defense of the same argument, okay, that 1/2 mv squared is not, doesn't have anything to do, okay, with reality. This is crap, and this is crap, and this is all there is, weight, in the universe. So to observe, to collect energy and to see what the energy would be of twice the velocity. So the idea of the experiment is just to send one thing with twice the velocity, one thing with one velocity, and just let them travel and see what they do, okay, and that'll tell you how much energy they have. So you're using basically just using friction. Now obviously if you did it in space, you'd get the obvious result. In any unit of time, you'd get a 2-to-1 result. You'd get exactly what you expect. A twice as fast thing would cover twice as much distance. So in a non-friction environment, that's what you're going to get as an answer, okay? So it's not going to be 4 times the distance. Now, in a friction environment, the whole argument is the friction is biased because it's being created by gravity. Now, if you're going to apply the friction in some other way, some other measure of impact, bowling pins, you know, if I create bowling pins and I have the same ball and I have it with twice the velocity versus one velocity, the argument would be I'm going to, you know, like even if it was pool balls, you know, and you're going to smash into the rack, okay, with a certain amount of energy, you're only going to get, we'll see, this ball's rolling again, which is a problem. So it's better stick to pins, okay? They're going to just fly off, all right? And they're going to fly off at a speed, blah, blah, blah. And if you calculate it out, it's just a transfer of the momentum, okay? So whatever the ball is, you know, whether it's going twice the velocity, then it's only going to move the pins twice as fast. It's not going to move them 4 times as fast. It's not going to hit 4 times more pins. It's not going to do any of that stuff. All right, but if you roll something in gravity, all right, it does do this 4 times thing. Now, Franklin, who points out that he really hasn't thought about this at all, and that he doesn't know whether friction is the same per foot. Like, every foot is a certain amount of energy. And that's the whole argument here, that the energy is really in contact, how much pressure you're placing on something. So you can make an obvious argument that if I had a scale for part of this track and I just measured the weight, okay, with a spring, of a vehicle or any object traveling across it, I can understand that the faster it's going, the less it's going to weigh. I mean, it's going to weigh a lot less if it's going twice as fast. It's going to weigh at least twice as less. So obviously per foot, I'm not doing the same thing. I'm not collecting the same energy from the object. I'm not having the same contact. I obviously cannot pull its energy out. So yes, twice the velocity, four times the distance. But again, it's only twice the time. And that's the important part. You're per foot, when you're going fast, you're putting half the pressure on the track. You're losing half as much through this process where you're going fast than you are in this process. You're losing much more once it gets half the speed, which is the same speed as this, 1V. Once it gets to 1V, all right, then it starts doing what this does, which is losing a lot per unit of traveling time. So this will be the same amount of friction and weight. These two will equal each other. This little portion and this portion. And it's this one that's disproportional, where you weighed the same as you weighed here. You spent as much time pushing on the scale. This, if I could make this a separate weight and this a weight, and I measured it on a scale, a spring, these two would equal each other. This little bit of distance moving slow, that is longer, the same amount of time. This time will be the same as this time. It's the same time on the scale. I'm going to get the same reading on the scale. So obviously this one is one unit of spring compression, one unit of spring compression. This has two. Twice as much energy, not four times. So anyway, to get to that experiment. Now, what he's done here is just compared. Well, first, there's lots of ways you could make a slope, right? You could drop something in gravity, and then you could let it go down a loop and come back up the other side, and you could say, look, it's got this. It's the same, okay? You're just collecting the energy that you produced. And all we're really saying is okay, you could have a ramp that was less rampy. You can change the slope of the, you could drop it sharply and then gradually go back up. But the point is the less friction you have, the more likely it is it's going to go back to the same height you dropped it. A little bit, all you're doing is losing some of the friction. In the ideal circumstance with no friction, it goes exactly the same height it started at. Okay, and it doesn't matter what slope this ramp has. It's irrelevant. It doesn't tell you anything. It certainly doesn't, again, dropping it from this height and raising it to this height certainly doesn't prove that, somehow twice the velocity means four times the energy, because you already know that it takes four times the height to go twice as fast. So you're just using the same broken ruler, gravity, to answer the question. And so you're really not answering it. So clearly, if you want to do these experiments, you can't. The point is you got to evade using gravity as the detector, because yes, gravity is going to give you the same answer. It's time dependent, not distance dependent. And so that's the fundamental disagreement. These people think distance tells you something, when obviously, again, if I get rid of all the friction, distance tells me 2-1. Okay, that's what's going to happen. Not 4-1, okay? In space, if I launch something at twice the speed, it's only going to go twice as far in the same amount of time. It's not going to go four times further. I mean, that's almost a duh statement. So why would I want to eliminate the friction and then measure the distance? Because, frankly, that'll just prove my point, not their point. And yet they're arguing for eliminating the friction, which is the whole point. You're using the friction to pull out the energy. And the simple argument is gravitationally caused friction, okay, linear? That is it the same amount of friction per foot, regardless of velocity? And this, I would argue that any idiot should know, of course it's not the same amount per foot. Of course it has less contact the faster it's going. it's pushed down less. It will place less weight. It's like you running fast. You could step on another human being. If you run fast, stepping on them won't mean much. But if you run slow and take your time and let the weight push into them, they're going to feel it. You're going to exchange more energy the slower you're moving in gravity. All right, that should be enough. And we'll just read some comments. Play a little bit. I mean, there's no real point in playing it. I mean, it's just sort of an obvious... I mean, something no one would need this proven. Okay, if somebody asked you the question, which one goes faster? Yeah, you're going to figure it out pretty quick. All right. So it's just a car on a track. All right, so we'll get to that. Get rid of this. All right, so it's a little matchbox car. And all that's going to happen here is it's going to oscillate. And all he's going to demonstrate is the car oscillation runs out of energy quickly. Where if I just rolled a ball bearing, it'll last 10 times at least longer. The energy will be lost to the track, over a much larger period of time, a much larger traveling distance. And for the obvious reason that it's only one wheel, and it doesn't have an axle. It's not carrying a car. I mean, it's obvious. It has such obvious advantages in terms of being able to make contact with the track and transfer its energy to the track. All right. So we just get to the action bits here. All right. So you can see the car is running out pretty quickly. All right, so we'll do it one more time. Technically, the car was dropped from a lower height also, just because of the way it works out, the center of mass. All right, so it only lasts 4 oscillations or something like that. Okay, and then the ball bearing is somewhere in here. So it goes many times more oscillations. So it's losing less energy to friction. But again, the whole point of the experiment is to take the energy away from the object in some manner to measure it. You're trying to measure how much energy it has. If you don't use any of its energy, you can't measure how much energy it has. Duh. All right. And the fact that it goes, you drop it from 4 times higher and it goes back up to 4 times higher, it doesn't mean anything because it doesn't change the fact that it's only going twice as fast. And it's only going to be on the track twice as long. And it's only going to weigh twice as much. It doesn't change all of the twos. Again, if I drop something from 4 times the height, it only weighs twice as much. I mean, this is a gigantic thing, right? I drop it from 1 centimeter. The scale goes down that far. I drop it from 4 centimeters. The scale only goes that far. It only weighs twice as much. Clearly, gravity isn't linear or proportional. Gravity is about time. It's about how long are you in the gravity. We'll tell you how much force you're collecting from gravity. If you free fall for 2 seconds, you go a certain speed. If you free fall for 4 seconds, you go a certain speed. And it's only going to be twice the speed. It's not going to be 4 times the speed. It's just about time. All right. So now we'll just do the comments. All right, Brozo comment. Wow, what a dramatic difference between toy cars and things actually want to roll, things which actually want to roll. So that's not a very scientific statement. I mean, obviously there's less inhibiting its progress. It has less bits rubbing against bits. It's making less contact with the rest of the world, obviously. Why couldn't Franklin have tested how much energy his moving object had by measuring how far it went up an inclined plane, because that would tell him absolutely nothing. Drop it from 4 times the height, it'll go back to almost 4 times the height. So inclining the plane. Again, clearly if I have an inclined plane, all right, so I have one side that's sloped, you know, 60 degrees, and the other side is sloped 30 degrees. The traveling time on this side will be longer, okay? And so you'll definitely have more contact with the surface. So one side will probably steal more energy than the other. But again, it's not a very good way of testing for how much energy something has. It just doesn't make any sense. Drop it from four times as high and watch it go back to four times as high. It's like swinging a pendulum and saying, yeah, I'm going to see how much energy the pendulum has by seeing how far it goes up the other side. That's not going to tell me anything. Your own video mocked the idea. You called it Gary's cheat. Now you're suggesting Brozo's cheat. And again, I would argue mine wasn't a cheat in the sense that you're the one who claims springs aren't linear. That they don't, twice the compression doesn't produce twice the velocity. Which would be more accurate than measuring how quickly friction brings an unreliable toy car to a standstill. Well, it does it fairly reliably, but you have to understand the rules of the friction. So again, saying the word friction is what makes this whole thing broken anyway, right? Because there's different ways to apply friction. I can apply it with something that's not gravity dependent. That is, it isn't affected much by gravity. I can rub something from the sides. I can do something that isn't really involving friction, like knocking a pin or something. I mean, you can't knock something up into gravity, right? So that doesn't work. You can't knock something down into gravity because that's, again, cheating. But there are other ways to apply friction. So you could argue that, yes, if we could put little tiny generators on these objects and then we could generate electricity, that would be a way of finding out which one had more real energy. Okay. John Walker suggested using an inclined plane instead of inconveniently long distance maybe a year ago. And it doesn't mean anything. What would the inclined plane be demonstrating except energy in, energy out? You're trying to take the energy out of the object in some consistent manner. You're trying to find a good way to measure its energy. Now, you argue that dropping round things into clay is a good way. And I'm arguing that, no, smushing clay is a good way. Now, which one do you think is going to hold up over the test of time? Smushing clay or denting clay? So I'd say right there you're going to lose the argument. Which one has a complication involved and which one doesn't? All right. I've only done it for my own satisfaction so far, not good enough to warrant videoing. Well, there's absolutely nothing to do. Theoretically, it's like a pendulum. It'll run out of energy because of air resistance. It'll run out of energy, in this case, more faster because it's going to have friction with the track. So what are you demonstrating? Nothing. If Franklin was right and friction was an advantage in this experiment, yes, the friction has a bias. It has a bias. The slower you're going, the more the friction affects you. The slower you're going, the less the friction affects you. Yes, if that's true, which Franklin wasn't even saying it was true, he was just suggesting maybe that's true. So he was suggesting that, yes, maybe his whole experiment is a piece of crap because he doesn't know whether friction is the same per foot no matter what velocity you're traveling. When I'd say it's kind of obvious it's not the same per foot. A convenient measure of energy, why not use a brick? Because you're trying to collect the energy. Dropping a brick in air, there's very little friction, very little for you to take the brick's energy away. I did that 2 years ago. So he's still defending the launching experiments, which theoretically, if he did them correctly, provide absolutely no choice. An object going twice as fast in air resistance alone has to travel twice as far, not four times as far. All right. I used a lever to slide launch two individual Nakoda bricks at two different velocities. So, yes, proven by what? So, anyway, he did this. We never saw this. As an alternative to launching objects compressing receiver springs to measure the energy. Well, what did you do to measure the energy? Rely on friction? Oh, okay, too stupid. Offhand, I can't recall which video that was in. Yeah, they're all crap. At least 2 years ago. So exciting. I will dig it out if it helps. No, the argument will be, yes, go ahead and dig it out. It'll help illustrate the fact that you don't even understand any of these concepts. You don't understand what we're after. Is evidence, you know, and you can't make evidence out of wrong assumptions. I only vaguely recall it being a satisfactory experiment. So that's, you're saying you know something, yet you don't know it. Okay, fine. I don't suppose Franklin feels he can rely on the height as a measure of energy. Well, yes, that's true. Okay, so this part is just about Franklin's, you know. His first experiment was a pile of crap. I called it a pile of crap. Okay, I pointed out that obviously there's a huge flaw if he doesn't understand the 4-to-1 relationship in gravity. You know, blah, 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 blah. All right. So him being proven wrong about 4 times the height, he now brushes it under the carpet. Who taught him that, Gary? So again, we see who's brushing everything under the carpet. I mean, for 2 years I've been harping about levers. And what experiment have you done demonstrating that levers function differently than I've stated? Oh, that's right. Every single one has either proven me 100% correct or has obvious defects where you're not using a lever. You call it a trebuchet and it's not a trebuchet. You don't have a counterbalance on the lever and then pretend it's the same as what I'm talking about when it's clearly not. You cheat all over the place. So go ahead, make your lever video, please. Prove that levers don't work exactly the way I've described. All right. Nicely built anyway, Michael. So anyway, this is all quite redundant. Like I say, I can go to a Professor Lewin video with an uneven, pendulum, in terms of the roller coaster. And there's a Julia Sumner video, where he has a less dramatic arc and a 60-degree angle versus a 30-degree angle. And yes, it works like a pendulum. It goes back and forth. It does all the things it's supposed to do. But it's obviously not measuring the energy. All right. So, nice and sturdy. And more importantly, demonstrates clearly that toy cars are just hopeless in science experiments. Well, they're not hopeless if you understand how to extract their energy. But whatever. It doesn't really matter. It depends on what you're doing the experiment for. Obviously, you can crash cars into each other and gain information by doing that. But the point is you have to do it in a manner where you're able to control or understand exactly what their velocities are at impact. All right, so we'll read some of this crap from Michael. Thank you, Steve. The difference between the two rolling objects is quite significant. John and myself had suggested this test to Franklin, but it seems to fall on deaf ears because it's pointless. I mean, so 2 years ago I did the simple experiment, just trying to use the same energy to push twice the mass and a half mass, so a 1 mass and a 2 mass, same spring compression, launch them. Now the trick is you got to make some sort of quick release and all this other stuff, and then you have to measure the velocity as soon as possible, because yes, the differential and the friction will take hold and screw up the results. But the fact is, I got results very close to 2-to-1, okay? I mean, yeah, it was 1.87 or something. Pretty close. So, again, the argument is that, twice the mass, half the velocity. It works. I can show Professor Lewin saying it, right? Should I play that clip in this video again? Just for fun? Yeah, I guess I will. Well, no, I won't bother, but come on. You can finagle kinetic energy, but you can't finagle momentum. Come on, let's keep playing the game. Alright, anyway. So, yes, useless. So, he does an experiment that's really completely unsurprising and demonstrates nothing regarding supporting the kinetic energy theory. Alright. Yeah, I don't know what else is there. I mean, the real point is just prove that a lever, you can't use a lever to convert a 10-ton train going 5 miles an hour, that is a 10 mass going 5 velocity, into a 5 mass going 10 velocity. Just prove a lever can't do that, and you've won the argument. All right. But I don't think you can do it. Ambrosio already did the experiment, and it came out 19 and 11. Pretty close to 2 to 1. Alright. So, till next time and such, and so forth and whatnot. Yeah, there's not much you can say. I've been over the points. There's lots of points that have been made over and over and over. They haven't been countered with any response to the actual point. Energy is weight. And momentum creates weight. And it's just about how much weight over how much time. And that's your energy. All right, so until the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Just get out of here. All right, bye. Yeah, I'm almost gone. I think I'm officially gone. Okay. So the end. That's all, folks.